Expand your knowledge on alternatives to animal experimentation with the latest scientific information provided during the 11th World Congress on Alternatives and Animal Use in Life Sciences.
Welcome to this fourth podcast organized by the World Congress on Alternative and Animal Use in Life Sciences. I'm today with Charu Chandrasekhara, Director of the Canadian Center for Alternative to Animal Methods. Thank you for being with us, Charu. Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for the invitation to be here. I'm really excited to speak with you.
So are we. Today, we are going to talk about alternative methods in Canada, but also in the US.
You advocate for a paradigm shift in which human serves as a quintessential animal model in research.
Can you tell us more about your background and how you became passionate about new approach methodology throughout your career, Charu?
Well, it has been a really interesting and eye-opening journey for me. When I look back now, it's hard to believe this is where I ended up, because right after my PhD in biochemistry and molecular biology, I went straight into animal research because I believed at the time that I needed to do this to become a well-rounded researcher, because that's what's really ingrained in you when you're being educated in science, in biomedical research, that animal models are the end-all and the be-all. But I experienced firsthand that this is not the case, that in fact, animal models are more misleading than they're helpful. So I focused on animal models of heart failure and diabetes, primarily rodent models, for about 6 years. And throughout this 6 year time period, I went through a few profound experiences that were life changing for me, witnessing firsthand the scientific failures of animal research and the ethical dilemma of animal research. I couldn't reconcile these two, and I simply walked away from traditional academic research. And then I went on to embark on my journey in alternatives.
Were there a turning point in particular?
There were a couple of major points, and if I were to reflect on one, I think it was this epiphany that I had in 2011. I was working in a heart failure research lab. We were looking at the role of G-protein coupled receptors in ischemia reperfusion injury, and I was looking at receptor-receptor interactions between adenosine receptors and beta adrenergic receptors. We had a number of knockout mouse models in the laboratory, and we were working with them. And that summer, my father had a heart attack, and he required quadruple bypass surgery. So after I was with my dad for several weeks following his surgery, I remember standing at his bedside, looking around that ward with so many other people who had gone through the same surgery. I looked around and I realized this is why I went into science, to help humanity, to find treatments and cures for diseases. And heart failure was one of my passions. And then a few weeks later, I came back to the lab and I was working again with my mouse models. And one day, the day after I returned, I looked at my PI and I said, and I wanted to talk about the work we were doing, because with some of the receptors we were doing, if they were activated just in time during a heart attack, it could prevent reperfusion injury. So I looked at him and I said, hey, do you think this receptor was activated in my dad's heart during his heart attack? And he dropped everything he was doing, looked at me and said, how the hell would I know? We've never looked at this in the human heart. And that expression, it rings true in my head all the time. I remember it like it happened today. This happened, you know, exactly 10 years ago. And that was a profound moment in my career, where I was thinking, what am I doing this for then? Before you even start looking at animal models of heart failure, why is it that we haven't looked at all these different receptor interactions? So whatever they may be, they need to be studied using human heart models. And the work that we were doing could have easily been done with human tissue. And it was just a couple of months later, I actually did some work with human hearts because I wanted to know what these receptor interactions were. And then I left that lab, but I went and ahead and worked in another animal research lab doing diabetes research. And the same thing there, I experienced firsthand the failures of translation and also lack of reproducibility in animal research. And it was at the end of 2012, I completely walked away from academic research.
Were there an ethical turning point as well?
There was an ethical turning point in my career where I was able to link science with ethics in a way that I hadn't been able to do before. And before this incredible cat walked into my life, my cat Mowgli, she actually taught me all about animal sentience, that she was a person with a personality, and I saw in her all the traits that we attribute to humans, but I could see them all in her as well. I would see this innocence and purity in Mowgli's eyes that when I go into the lab, I started seeing the same expressions, the same purity and innocence in the eyes of the animals that I was experimenting on. And it was a profound realization for me that I am treating my animal at home in a completely different way than the way that I would be treating them in the lab, that I would never intentionally induce heart failure in my cat at home, but I was in the lab. And it was really difficult for me. Given the scientific failures of animal research, there came a point for me where it was really difficult to reconcile the two. And I started reading about animal welfare and the lack of animal welfare in the scientific community. You could have all these rules and legislation, but when you, at the end of the day, when you look at it, we're still not doing enough to protect animals in science. And that was a defining moment in my life where I decided that I couldn't reconcile the ethics with the scientific failures.
And that's how you decided to create the Canadian Center for Alternatives to Animal Methods?
Yes. So in 2013, I joined this incredible nonprofit organization in the United States called the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. I joined as their director of laboratory science. And that's where I really started on a transformative journey into alternatives. Where I was really exposed to this world that I was completely unaware of when I was a scientist in academia. So I joined PCRM in 2013, and I attended my first World Congress in 2014 in Prague. And then 3 years later, I announced the launch of the Canadian Center at the 10th World Congress in Seattle. So it was a very short and intense journey, I must say. And being exposed to the world community, especially at the World Congress in Prague, I was excited. And I saw all these possibilities. And at the same time, I became aware of the fact that we're actually lagging behind in Canada, and that Canada didn't have the kind of centers that all these other countries boast, and that I knew that we needed to keep doing things in Canada. But at the time, I was, you know, very happy doing the work I was doing in the United States. But a couple of years later, it just so happened that I decided to embark on this journey. So I developed this center from literally a back of a napkin idea.
Can you tell us how it works? What is the structure and activity? Who are the members of the center?
So the vision of the Canadian Center for Alternatives to Animal Methods is to promote the replacement of animals in Canadian biomedical research, education, and regulatory testing through 21st century science, innovation, and ethics. And our mission is to really serve as a Canadian leader and nexus to advance alternatives through national and international academic, industry, government, and public interdisciplinary partnerships. So we try to work with everyone who plays a key role in shifting this paradigm from animal-centered one to a human-centered one. The center has three key pillars: a research pillar, academic pillar, and a regulatory pillar. The research pillar is focused on creating disease in a dish, essentially to promote the reduction and replacement of animals in hypothesis-driven basic biomedical research. The regulatory pillar, as the name implies, is focused on regulatory testing to validate and promote the regulatory acceptance of new approach methods to modernize toxicology and risk assessment. And this work is being done in collaboration with national and international partners. Our academic program, I must say, is the hallmark feature, and it's designed to instill curiosity, ignite a passion for the discipline, build a solid knowledge base, and develop critical analytical skills to think outside the cage. So we currently offer Canada's first and only graduate course in new approach methods, and we are in the process of developing a master's program in animal replacement science. And we're also working with school boards and universities to promote animal-free dissection. So in essence, we try to cover three key important areas with training the next generation at the forefront of all of our efforts.
You were saying before that Canada was lagging behind. What is the legislating framework in Canada when it comes to animal welfare in science and the promotion of the three R's, and in particular maybe replacement, and how different it is compared to the US or to the EU?
So this is not really an easy comparison because there are many differences. I think, first of all, it's easy to mention that we don't really have anything similar to what you have in the European Union in terms of promoting the three R's. You have the EU Directive 2010-63, which is the most advanced legislation on the planet for the protection of animals used for scientific purposes. In the United States, there is an Animal Welfare Act, but that act actually excludes mice, rats, birds, and fish. And as you know, mice and rats are the most widely used animals in scientific research, and yet they're excluded from the Animal Welfare Act. And in Canada, we don't even have an Animal Welfare Act. Animals are considered property covered under the Criminal Code of Canada. So these are very different scenarios that we have. And I say, and I can say that in North America, three R's is an abstract concept. It's something that you think about in a way, and more like a box ticking exercise if you're writing a grant or doing other applications. And when this comes up, it's sort of like, okay, have you considered alternatives? Oh yes, I can't do any of my work without using alternatives. So the mentality is a little bit different from the kind of pressure that you have coming from the EU Directive 2010-63 in the European Union. But at the same time, there are other efforts going on here in North America where we are advancing the three R's. As I'm sure you're aware, in the United States, there are national strategic roadmaps, the ICFM roadmap, FDA predictive toxicology roadmap, the EPA legislation-guided roadmap to shift away from vertebrate animal testing. And that's, you know, legislation, the amended Toxic Substance Control Act that was introduced in a few years ago, where now the United States Environment Protection Agency is planning to end the use of animals for chemical testing by 2035. So there is a lot of progress being made here. And in Canada, we don't really have legislation like that yet. And I hope that we will be able to bring in some legislation, not just to address the shift in science, but also address the ethics and to bring in this legislation we need for the protection of animals used for scientific purposes.
And Canada and the US are collaborating very closely when it comes to research. What is the place of the 3R in this collaboration?
So most of the collaboration between Canada and USA, there is high-level collaboration between regulatory agencies, and this is really important for the acceptance of new approach methodologies for regulatory risk assessment. So Health Canada is the primary regulator in Canada that's involved in chemical assessment and management in Canada. And they, while they do not have any specific legislation telling them to shift away from vertebrate animal testing, Health Canada has taken it upon themselves to work with international partners. So the U.S. Regulators, first and foremost, the Environment Protection Agency and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, and then also with the European Chemicals Agency, European Medicines Agency, all of these different regulators and across the globe as well, in different partnerships and in consortia to contribute to the development, the validation and regulatory acceptance of non-animal methods. So Health Canada plays a big role in participating at the OECD and in the international consortia representing Canada and actively participating in all of these efforts to modernize toxicology and risk assessment in Canada.
According to the US National Institute of Health, 95% of all drugs that are shown to be safe and effective in animal tests fail in human trials. What does that tell us? How can we change these figures?
Well, that is a loaded question, and it's something that I think about constantly. The biggest challenge we face is model organisms, the mousetrap. The rodents rule the lab, really. There's ample evidence that the scientific community has been terribly misled by modeling disease in mice. And this could honestly be the subject of an entire podcast that could last a few hours. And the scientific community often overstates the utility of model organisms in disease research. And we need to be much, much more critical. So I've been saying this for years, that it is paradoxical that we know more about animal biology than human biology. And if the ultimate goal of the scientific community is to advance human medicine and safety testing, then our species must serve as the quintessential animal model, and our biology must be the gold standard. And we can and we must change this figure. And it's not an easy task, obviously, because there are so many factors that come into play. But I don't think we have a choice. We have to change the system. You know, how much longer do we want to go on accepting a 95% failure rate? So if you continue down the same path of overly relying on animal models, we could easily go for another 200 years without finding effective treatments for the diseases that are ravaging our society today. You know, how much longer are we going to go with, you know, my favorite example, Alzheimer's disease with a 99.6% failure rate? That could very easily last for another 100, 200 years if we don't change the system, if we don't start focusing on human biology. And, you know, there's a lot that we could do to change this system.
What are the obstacles to change these models? What are the obstacles to the adoption of new approach methodology? What incentive can we put in place to advance science in that field?
So this is a very complex situation. And honestly, I don't have all the answers, but I think there are some things that we can change very easily if we all came together as a scientific community. So what I find is that we don't really have an incentive put in place right now to shift away from animal testing. It's a problem with the system that we have in place. We have a system where we revere, where we essentially worship animal models. They are first and foremost in everything that we do, whether it's our grant proposals or publications where reviewers constantly are asking for animal model data. Even when you try to publish a paper that's purely based on rigorous science using new approach methods, you often get asked this question, and I've personally been asked this question, where is the animal model data? How can you validate your work without using animal models? And this is also the same problem that we are facing, right? When it comes to regulatory validation for even, you know, organ on chip models, how are we validating our data? We're doing it by going back and forth and back and forth to in vivo data that we've collected over the last few decades from animal models. And so this shift in thinking has to happen before you will see any real progress. And I think that can be driven by legislation. That we need very strong legislation that prioritizes human biology and human relevance, and legislation that essentially, you know, forces people to walk down this path and guidelines that will incentivize researchers to switch from animal models to human-based alternatives. In fact, you know, I don't even like to refer to alternatives as alternatives. I think animal models need to be the alternative. So there are a number of things that we could do to change this, right? So we can change the grant review systems, the journal review systems, where you are not prioritizing animal models, but instead asking for human data. Funding agencies can incentivize human biology-based research and promote multidisciplinary collaborations. A lot of researchers tend to work in silos, and we need to break that. We need to bring different groups together. Even when you think about development of tissue models or microfluidic technologies, it's not just the biologists who did it. You need the engineers. You need the computational specialists. You need to bring the physicists. You need to bring all of these different groups together. So you need to incentivize this at a high level, especially from funding agencies. And one of the other big things I say is that we need to evaluate research success by human relevance, not by journal impact factor. And to set up these national centers for alternatives and to build a national infrastructure in every country, and then to really work at the global level to facilitate the validation of next-gen tools and to adopt those methods. We don't have a lack of methods at the moment. We have lack of implementation of those methods. So if we could bring some of these key pieces together, I think we can quickly shift this paradigm.
How this research is funded in Canada? Is there any dedicated budget?
So funding in general for scientific research is quite limited in Canada. We don't have the kind of budget that there is with the National Institutes of Health simply because we are a smaller country. And in terms of looking at the allocation of budget, there's a lot of money that goes into animal research, especially biomedical research, hypothesis-driven basic biomedical research. And this is the same with the Canadian Institutes of Health Research and the National Institutes of Health. Close to 50% of the money goes into animal-based research. And then from the small pot that we have in Canada, there isn't really anything that's very specifically dedicated to promoting a new approach methodologies, and even my center is not currently funded by the Canadian government, and I'm really hoping that money will come soon enough so that we could truly build this into a national facility, you know, kind of like what you have in many other countries in the European Union, in the United States, that are funded by the federal government. And in the US, there have been many efforts. For example, when organ chip technologies were first being developed, there were huge grants, right? Hundreds of millions of dollar grants coming from the US National Institutes of Health, DARPA, and FDA, and a number of other organizations to really bring these technologies out and about. But in Canada, we don't have the same kind of initiatives. Funding is limited and it's extremely competitive to get some of these grants, and most of these grants look for animal data. So we have still a long ways to go in terms of dedicating resources specifically to promote these in Canada.
Animal testing seems to be still enshrined in our mindset. How can we change that? What is the role of the next generation of scientists? Are they more aware of the new approach methodology? What role can they play, and how can we support them?
I truly believe that we have to focus on the next generation of scientists, and they are the ones who are going to carry forward the groundbreaking advances that are currently being made. We have the paramount responsibility of educating the next generation to think outside the cage. We need these next gen scientists to be on grant review panels to defend new approach methods. They need to be on, you know, on journal review panels and be journal editors to accept manuscripts based solely on human data. And we need scientists who have established laboratories that are 100% animal free. And we need the next gen regulators to make crucial decisions on human health risks using only NAMs. So there are many areas where that need to come together, where we really need to change the next generation to think about these methods with an open mind, not to follow on the footsteps of those who have led before us, who have relied solely on animal data. So I think it's really important for us to ingrain in these students that animal models are not the end all and the be all, that we can get away with them, and that we don't need to wait for this all encompassing method or methods to switch away from animal testing, that we can already start utilizing what we have and answer as many questions as possible with the methods that we have, and then continue to develop new approach methods that will address some of the shortcomings or that will address some of the areas where we're still lacking alternatives, and to really get them to think about this process the same way that anyone who's going into grad school right now is given as a knockout mouse model and asked to characterize that. We need to take these next generation scientists and give them some of these alternative methods and ask them to run with it. I think changing that mindset has to start quite young. Maybe even at the high school level to introduce them to the three R's, then at university levels, really focus curricula on introducing the three R's and new approach methods, and in graduate school for sure, to expose them to as many methods and the world as possible, that there is something outside, there is something beyond animal testing. And this is, as I said before, is one of the fundamental pieces in our research program, is to develop the next gen training programs.
The World Congress on Alternative and Animal Use in Life Science is a great moment to exchange. You participate in the edition in Prague and Seattle before, and you will be there in Maastricht, I mean, online, obviously. What is it important for you to participate in this Congress?
The World Congress is an incredible opportunity, a one-stop shop, really. It's like walking into a huge department store where you can find everything you want, from groceries to clothing to electronics and much more. I think of the World Congress the same way. It's a place where you find everything you want in one place, where you get exposed to every sector, academia, industry, government, and nonprofit sectors, and to every discipline from biomedical research, toxicology, risk assessment, legislation, and education. You know, most traditional academic research conferences are quite different. It's where people tend to discuss very niche projects. But here at the World Congress, we're always looking at the big picture and always working towards a common goal and taking into everything that we need to reach that goal. So when we're talking about a paradigm shift, where we're, you know, moving away from animal models, this is something that's been ingrained in our society for the last 200 years. So it requires a lot of different areas, a lot of different disciplines and fields and technologies to come together harmoniously. And this conference is where you will get exposed to all of them at the same time. And then we also discuss the progress, the challenges, the opportunities, the barriers, and everything else that we will face, that we're facing now, and that we will face over the next decade. So it's a great opportunity, especially for younger people, you know, those scientists who are just starting their PhD programs, or they're just starting their first lab. They need to see what all these possibilities are, and they need to see how all these different sectors, the academics, the industry, government, and nonprofits, how they come together to make it happen, and essentially a huge transformation in a system that has been around for a couple of centuries. So this was so transformative for me personally. It was going to the World Congress in 2014 that really opened my mind. And in 2014, I had only been in this field for just over a year. And 3 years later, in 2017, at the World Congress in Seattle, I was able to announce the launch of a new Canadian Center for Alternatives to Animal Methods. So I think this could be quite inspirational and informative for anyone to attend, where you can really get everything you want under one roof.
Thank you very much, Charu, for taking the time to share with us all this information. We're looking forward to seeing you at the Congress.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'm really looking forward to participating in WC11. It's too bad that we were not able to travel to the Netherlands. It would have been so much more fun. But nonetheless, we have an exciting program. And I look forward to seeing you all.
So we are inviting you to check out the program online on wc11maastricht.org. The Congress will start on the 23rd of August and will last until the 2nd of September. Thank you very much, Charu.
Thank you. Take care. Enjoy WC11.
Thank you for listening. This podcast was produced by Alta Talks Academy. Registration to the 11th Congress on Alternatives and Animal Use in Life Sciences is now open on our website, www.wc11maastricht.org.